This is another installment in our ongoing series of Tarot readings exploring the divine laws of life. Tonight we're working with the law of inquiry. The question is, what is the divine law of inquiry and how can aspirants best harness it? And we've laid the spread out, and the cards are as follows. The starting point is the Magician, upside down. Magician is number one in the major arcana. The counterpoint is the King of Rods, right upside down. And the challenge is Judgment, the number 20 in the major arcana. It's upside down. The Purpose is the Devil, number 15 in the major arcana. It's right side up. The Endowment is the Ten of Rods, right side up. That's a one. The Destiny is the Ace of Rods, right side up. That's a one. So you'll notice there's these three that go across, the Ten of Rods, the Magician, and the Ace of Rods are all number one. Then we come to the Pillar of Revelation. We have the real question, which is the Eight of Rods upside down. We have in the position of unseen forces, we have the Fool right side up. The Fool is number zero in the major arcana. In the position of the spiritual ideal, we have the Nine of Cups upside down. And in the position of the fulfillment, we have the Seven of Pentacles upside down. So we have four upright cards, six reverse cards. We have four majors, which is a little unusual. We have the Magician, Judgment, the Devil, and the Fool. We have zero swords, four rods, which is highly unusual. Four rods being the Ten of Rods, the King of Rods, the Ace of Rods, and the Eight of Rods. And we have one cup and one pentacle. Another interesting thing about this, other than the Ace and the Wands, every numbered card basically is of the higher range. We have an 8, we have a 9, a 7, and a 10. We don't have the 1, 2s, and 3s, or the 2s, 3s, and 4s that we often do. So this is our question. What is the divine law of inquiry, and how can aspirants best harness it? Now, I want to say right up front, just for the to go on record here, that this is, I think, the only one in the series of 42 laws that we're investigating that is not enumerated as such by the Tibetan. He doesn't have any reference to the law of inquiry as such. It's included because it's such an important law in the Sermon on the Mount. Ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, and so on. It's obviously a divine law of life, and a very important one, even though it wasn't specifically enumerated by the Tibetan. So we're approaching this on the basis of ask and it shall be revealed, seek and it shall be given. The idea here is that it's impossible to ask a true question and not get an answer. There are no such things. There are false questions, questions that lead us nowhere. There are all kinds of dead-end questions in life. But if you ask a question properly formulated in the mind, you will draw an answer. And that answer will reveal something of divine life and divine nature. So this is one of the most fundamental laws of the human mind and training the human mind. It it reveals to us the primacy of the mind. As we develop the mind, we can use this mind to focus on the invisible dimensions of life and discover about them and receive insight and inbursts of wisdom that reveal to us the nature of the invisible life. It develops our senses and our awareness. And in fact, the very fact that we're using the tarot to investigate the laws of life, the divine laws of life, in the mind of God, is a perfect demonstration of how this law acts and its importance. Without this law, we would be unable to, the whole dynamic of the tarot and any other type of system like the I Ching, parallel to it, is based on the law of inquiry. The idea here is that we can shuffle the cards and lay them out, thinking of a specific question, and the mind of God will reveal an answer through that set of symbols that are placed down. This means that the mind of God is highly organized and is not only receptive to inquiry, it invites inquiry. That inquiry, divine curiosity, if you wish, is the means by which we rise out of our earthbound consciousness and tap the abstract levels of life. And we tend to think of this in a negative, receptive way. Well, I've got a question. Will God answer it? The law of inquiry says the only reason why you have a question is so that God can answer it. The answer is known. Truth is known. It's available. It's readily available. You don't invent it. You discover it through the law of inquiry. And so the very fact that these patterns exist allow us to create vortices that tap into this and draw this wisdom down into our understanding, into our mind, and then we can share these ideas with other people. So these tarots are, in Sesame Street, they used to say today's program is brought to you by the letter F or G or something like that. Well, in a real sense, these tarots are brought to you by the law of inquiry, made possible by the law of inquiry. And the place I want to start here is not with the starting point. We'll get to that eventually. But I want to start with the devil. I'm sure that's already leaped out and caught your attention anyway. And it pretty much sums everything up. This is the purpose, in the position of the purpose. And the devil is a picture of a bat-like demon separating male and female in the burning fire. Okay, so we have male and female. We automatically have a duality here. And the idea of duality is that our great duality, as we indicate, if we look up at the culmination, the Seven of Pentacles, the intended duality is that of the soul and its faithful servant, the goose. And the soul is meant to master the personality, but the personality is meant to serve the soul. That's when you have a integrated personality and soul. All duality is meant to be harnessed, and in the process of finding out how to balance the duality and reunite that which has been separated, we learn the lesson of unification or communion. So the devil here suggests that the soul and the personality have been alienated, just as men and women are frequently alienated, not understanding one another. Ideas are separated, and as a result, there's confusion, conflict, disagreement, and forces going their contrary ways. This is not desired, but it's the state of life in the separated condition of heaven and earth. Heaven and earth are meant to be seen as one and the same, just oscillating back and forth. What this means here, if you combine these two cards, the devil in the purpose card position and the culmination, the Seven of Pentacles, we are meant to use the process of inquiry through which we develop a strong and intelligent mind that is capable of penetrating the mysteries of life. We are meant to develop this strong capacity for inquiry and establish in our life a dialogue with the soul. The mind of the enlightened personality establishes a dialogue, an ongoing, a constant dialogue. The example of this, Socrates talked about dialogues and demonstrated them. The Christ demonstrated in the Garden of Gethsemane the ideal dialogue in which he was talking with the Father and saying, I'm coming to you, and blah, blah, blah. These are, look after my disciples. These are my chosen followers who I commend to your care, and so on. And it is a lovely, poetic, profound dialogue between the personality and the soul, between the Christ and the Father. And this is a fundamental pattern or law. We are meant to commence this dialogue with God. And the only way we can do this is through the law of inquiry. We ask questions, and then we wait and hope that in the expectation that the divine mind answers those questions. We are guaranteed that it will. If we formulate a correct question, a question with an answer, according to the Christ, it's guaranteed. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and you shall find. And so we have to approach life with this expectation that as we need insight, support, comfort, guidance, all we need to do is ask for it and wait and activate it as it comes through, as an inburst of help and energy. This is a dynamic principle, which then unites the personality with the soul as you gain experience. Okay, with that in mind as a beginning statement, let's go back to the starting point, the magician. The magician is an enlightened agent of light. Working with divine power, you can see how the divine energy comes down to a V right around behind his back. And he's working with all these divine archetypal patterns, all those little frilly things up in the upper part of the card. He's under the sign of the infinity, so he's able to work with abstract thought. And he's in control of the four elements of life. Depicted here is the four signs of the tarot, the pentacle, the cup, the rod, and the sword. These would be the four elements of air, earth, fire, and water. And he's capable of creative work. He's able to use these forces dynamically. And so this is the law of the magician. The magician is one who has learned to inquire into the nature of life. He studied alchemy, studied astrology. He studied all the arcane sciences. He's also studied the outer sciences. He knows the numbers of creation, the words of power, etc. He studied this, and he works by activating the mind of God. Now, that may still seem a little bit far-fetched to you, but you have to understand that we're working with a basic principle here. When the Christ, when Jesus was instructing his disciples before they went to Jerusalem in how to carry on his behalf, he said, if you go into a town and they're receptive to you, then you preach the good news. Otherwise, if they're hostile to you, you leave the town and you You shake the dust of that town off of your shoes before going on elsewhere. Now, the point he then added that do not worry what you're going to say. When you get to that point, you will know what to say, because the nature of divine intelligence will overshadow you, and the needs of the people, the message that you must deliver to the people, will come into your awareness as an inburst. And that in doing that, you make the connection that you're not just giving them a canned speech that you've delivered to 100 different places, but you're allowing divine intelligence to use you as a channel for answering the questions these people have. Not the questions that they raise their hand and say, oh, let me ask a question. These are the questions that really motivate them at unconscious levels. Their need to know. And probably, in many cases, they don't want to know. They wouldn't ask the question if they consciously formulated it, because it's often embarrassing to them. Again, there's the example of Jesus confronting the woman of the well, and she goes on about this, that, or the other thing, and he points out that she's been married 5 times, had 5 husbands, and isn't even married to the one she's living with now, and blah, blah, blah. He knew everything to talk about, because he exemplifies this point of asking it will be given to you. But from the point of view of the soul, see, the law of inquiry is based on understanding that we have certain things we need to discover. The soul knows what they are. We don't. We may have some ideas, or we may wonder about this, that, or the other thing, but the real questions, the reason why we have the real question in these spreads, the real question is always what the soul wants to tell us. What does the soul want us to hear? Okay, so the magician is somebody who has developed his mind to the point where it's organized by the divine mind. It's his mind, but he's created a miniature replica of the forces of the zodiac in his mind. He's created a miniature replica of the I Ching in his mind. He's taken each of these laws that we're talking about here and connected his mind to them so that they're activated, his own thoughts are activated by these laws. And most importantly, he conducts an ongoing daily conversation with God. Not the type where you pretend that you're sitting at tea at 3 o'clock with Jesus. That's just baloney and fantasy. But the type of thing where he's constantly asking for guidance from his higher intelligence, from divine sources. The counterpoint to this is, of course, the King of Rods. And the counterpoint emphasizes the extreme importance of mental mastery. The king is the master of the suit. And this is the King of Rods. He's the king of the mind. He's expert at using the mind in all of its many skills. And so this is the ability to focus the mind to pursue this conversation, this dialogue with the divine. Whether it's the soul within himself or a conversation with the soul of another person, or the soul of an animal, or of a plant, or a nation. See, when we talk about the spirit of America and making a connection with the spirit of America, we're talking about connecting with the soul of this nation. And of course, every nation has that inner essence, and the citizens of the respective nations are meant to make that connection. If you do, you can understand what's going on. If not, you may very well make jump to false conclusions. So this is the ability to join the two halves of a whole, the two halves of any duality, harmonize them, and create wisdom. We then move on to the challenge, and we have the card of judgment, the card of a kind of witty fellow blowing a trumpet. The sun is coming out over the clouds. The flowers are growing, and so on. This is the card of judgment of invocation. This is in terms of our discussion here. This governs the idea of revelation. That when we use our mind to penetrate into the mind of God and its tremendous bank of knowledge and wisdom, everything that we need to know can be discovered in the mind of God. As we penetrate, use the mind to penetrate to the source of our inquiry, to the answer to our inquiry, we reveal an aspect of the divine for ourselves, our own benefit, and for the benefit of other people. And this is what we call judgment, the ability to recognize the difference between the wheat and the chaff. There are things of heaven and there are things of earth. The things of heaven are the sun in this card, and the things of earth are the flowers growing on the ground. In order to understand the things of earth, we have to be able to understand the abstract patterns, which are their inner essence. So the process of judgment is one of interacting with the invisible dimensions of life and the ability to call forth any divine energy, to call forth joy and express it, to call forth light and use it to illuminate our thinking, to call forth harmony and use it to reconcile conflict and distress. These are active energies. And our goal here is to reveal that which is hidden. Now, a good example of this, of course, is what people were talking about just before we started this, and that is the shooting in Connecticut last week. It illustrates the utter confusion, ignorance, and desperation of 99.99% of human beings. No one who has appeared on television that I've seen knows what they're talking about. There are experts who do not know what they're talking about. There are theologians who do not know what they're talking about. And yet, it's a very simple thing. If you're in the habit of communicating on a regular basis, conversing with the force of spirit within you, then you're able to reveal the hidden patterns that this reveals. The very least of which is that there were several people who acted quite heroically in an effort to save children and gave up their lives. And one act of heroism should be worth at least 100 acts of desperate violence. But, of course, we don't talk about the need for gun control laws to encourage heroism. That's how confused and distracted we are by these things. The mind is the tool that we use to reveal that which is hidden. And so the card judgment, in a practical sense, in a pragmatic sense, as to what we need to cultivate, is a card that talks to us about curiosity. We need to develop a divinely inspired curiosity about what makes things happen. Why? What are the explanations here? The vast majority of statements made since last Friday or whenever that happened, have consisted of statements made about life on the physical plane. They don't reveal any higher level of understanding. There's no curiosity. There's a rush to condemn, a rush to put everything into tidy boxes that support belief systems that are already there, but there's almost no curiosity. Here's an event that by almost everybody's admission transcends their understanding, and yet there's no curiosity to try and understand what they don't understand. That's how stuck in the sand we are as a human race. We need to cultivate a curiosity that would lead us perhaps to an understanding of reincarnation, lead us to an understanding that the children that were gathered there probably all did unspeakable acts of murder in the past, and now they're getting an opportunity to clean their slates, and they'll reincarnate again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's all kinds of ways we can focus our curiosity, but very few people are doing so. So the law of inquiry is that divine law which encourages us, prods us, pokes us, get that kettle prod out, prods us to develop our curiosity, to ask questions, intelligent questions. All right, we move on then to the fourth card, the devil. We've already been here and done that. But this is a card of the illusion of separation. It's a card that talks about doubt on the one hand. How much doubt was expressed? Even when people talk about, well, it's just one of those mysteries of life we can't understand, they're not expressing their doubt, they're expressing their ignorance, their lack of understanding, and their unwillingness to exercise their curiosity to discover the solution. The opposite element of doubt, however, is awe. A lot of people, through the practice of awe and reverence, false practice, for example, the common approach to Christianity is to say that the Christ is somebody that is so great, so powerful, we can't possibly ever approach him. We're not even worthy to kiss his sandals. And that elevates him through a false reverence or awe, puts him on a pedestal that can't be achieved. That awe or reverence creates as much a separation as doubt does, as skepticism, as atheism. And so we have the two polar opposites, the atheistic denial of any inner essence and the awe, which makes the inner essence of man so remote that it's impossible to contact. Both of these are false polar extremes and need to be brought together, yoked together, so that we understand that God is within us. God is the divine mind is easily accessible, and that we are meant, we are designed, according to the law of inquiry, to develop our mind to understand these things. The mind is designed to unite with whatever is disjointed and separated. This is the famous triangle, the baseline with the polar opposites, the opposite extremes, and they seem to be irreconcilable, but the moment you connect them to the apex, to the divine ideal, then suddenly they are reconcilable. That's what the mind's designed to do. Every human being has the capacity to develop this simple mechanism for uniting seeming opposites. We talked about the law of paradox two times ago. The last time was the law of inevitability. But the law of paradox it comes into play here, where we recognize the seeming difference, but that's only on the finite level. The moment we use our spirit of inquiry and our divine curiosity, we discover how to put the two together and unite them. And again, the underlying purpose of this is to discover the potential for an ongoing, one-on-one, intimate conversation between ourselves and the soul, between ourselves and God, between the earth and heaven. And so our goal here is to achieve a divine dialogue. That's the purpose. The purpose is to establish a divine dialogue and expand upon that. Okay, I'm going to pause for a moment here and entertain any comments or questions. Anybody want to ask a question before we move on? This is a reading about inquiry, the law of inquiry. Questions are allowed and encouraged. Anybody? All right.
Carl?
Yes.
I know you had a class on, it's been a while, but asking the right questions.
The art of asking questions, yes.
And so to ask the right questions, you will pose something to the soul that it has already really answered. It's what? Just the fact you get better at that, and so you get the ability to grow and ask better and better and better questions.
Well, that's part of the dynamics. But keep in mind, just let's parse what you just said. The soul exists in eternity, in the eternal now. There's no past, present, and future to the soul. That's only to the personality. So, of course, as we ask a question of the soul, if it's a right and proper question, you know, if you ask a silly question like, why don't you love me? There's no answer to that because the soul does love you. And you're asking a question that has no legitimate answer, except you're wrong in your assumption. But if you ask a right question like, how can you help me better express your love for me to other people? The soul's known that answer from the beginning of time. The answer exists in a timeless, abstract level. We haven't gotten there yet, but we're heading that way. And so if you're able to formulate a question that the soul can answer, and no other questions are worth the time and trouble to formulate, then the answer already exists. And you see, this is how we confuse ourselves with even the language we use to formulate questions. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. And I asked you that because I'm looking for better ways to ask.
Right.
So, yes, and that does make very good sense. I mean, even that, the language can cause confusion. So...
Well, it's the language, but also all of our earthbound assumptions. For example, the events in Connecticut last week. People were going into their discussions of that with the idea that bullets can actually stop human life. That's news to God, because those people are just, as I pointed out in my column this morning, those children and adults are just as alive today as they were a week ago, 2 weeks ago. In fact, they're more alive now because they don't have the cumbrance of a human body to weigh them down. And so when we make the assumption that bullets can actually end human life, we're starting with a false assumption. Anything that derives from that discussion is false. It's not going to lead us to a greater realization of truth. It's going to lead us away from it. That's how important it is to structure our mind along the lines designed by the soul. Good. Other comments or questions here? Well, let's go on then. We go to the endowment, to the which is the Ten of Rods, and this is a fellow in light battle gear, with facing away from us, focusing on a sheaf of rods coming down to a single point. And so he's focusing mental energy into a single point. This is the power of the mind. We all know that one of the most ancient of all esoteric teachings is the mind, energy follows attention. We can use the mind to focus on something, and as we attune the mind, the spirit flows in according to that mental channel. That's what we're talking about here, that through many long eons, we've learned to create a vortex with our mind by focusing our attention on what we need or what we intend to do, our goals, our priorities, and the corresponding divine energy rushes in to fulfill our expectation. Well, not our expectations, but our intent. Our intent. And this is the power of the mind and why the mind is so important. We create these points of tension in our awareness. And that's the purpose of an inquiry or an invocation, or even a priority or goal. It lets us use the mind to focus on a specific point, and then energy follows attention. This is the human mind, again, is designed to do this. It's designed to, if our focus is on doubt and skepticism, we alienate ourselves further and further from the truth. If our focus is on understanding and unification and oneness, we gradually come into a rapport with the soul, and through the soul, the Father, and we create the anacharana, and spirit flows into form. And as that happens, it enriches the form life. So this is the mechanical basis, mechanical if you wish, the basis behind the law of inquiry. By focusing our mind on specific questions, learning to ask intelligent questions, learning to direct those intelligent questions to God or the soul, and recognizing that our intelligent questions invoke or provoke intelligent answers, then we train the mind. It's up to us. We have a choice to leave the mind flabby and ineffective, or to give it that focus that lets us penetrate the invisible dimensions of life. This then leads to the destiny, the card of destiny, the Ace of Rods, which is, of course, the Ace is the ideal of the mind, wisdom. The Ace of Rods is a card of wisdom. And this is the capacity to synthesize the duality of question and answer. We ask a question, God answers it. We ask a question, the soul answers it. The more we get into, the more we create the marvelous habit of creating an ongoing dialogue with the divine, the more we recognize the divine within our fellow human beings, the more we recognize the divine within the patterns of life, the more we recognize the divine working through our nation, other nations, the more we recognize the larger implications. I was just reading in DK today. I don't remember the passage, but it was a discussion that there are three types of illness that human beings really are powerless to do anything except search for cures and try to overcome them. But these three types of illnesses are inherent in the earth, not in humanity. Yes, human beings have done lots of terrible things that create vulnerabilities to these illnesses, but these three illnesses are the cancers, syphilis, and I'm not sure I can remember the third one, but these are innate in the unredeemed elements of the earth. And because we draw our physical bodies from the substance of the earth, clay, dust, our bodies are to a certain degree prone to developing cancers and syphilis. And of course, if you read this and understand this, then suddenly all the hysterical claims of silly people who say, oh, the white settlers gave the Indians syphilis. Well, that's kind of like saying you're when you give a loved one a diamond, you're conveying everything that's wrong with life to that person. It's an absurd statement. It's an absurd statement. It's there in the very substance of the earth that we dwell on, and there's nothing we can do about that except learn to elevate our vibration so that we're drawing our physical substance, our physical energy, from a higher level of earth energy. And you know, that's just part of the work that humanity's taken on to purify and redeem matter on earth. So, you know, get over it. It's not a great tragedy when somebody contracts these diseases or dies of them or whatever. It's part of having a physical body. Now, there are plenty of ways in which we compound that difficulty and don't take care of our physical bodies. And that was part of, I know what, I remember now what he was answering. He had been asked whether inoculations and vaccinations were harmful to the esoteric body of somebody on the spiritual path. And he said, hey, you know, your bodies are so damn polluted by the air you breathe, the water you swim in and drink, and the tobacco you smoke, and the booze you drink, and everything. What's a little medicine here or there going to do to you? And he said, actually, the medicine will help you a great deal, because it has eliminated lots and lots of diseases that still trouble the Orient. The Western Occidental medicine has prolonged life tremendously. And he said that's the advantage of Western science over many Eastern practices. But the point was, let's not take all these things quite so seriously. We do make our bodies out of these things, and so on and so on. Well, that's a digression from what I was talking about, but it illustrates the point, and that is that there's nothing in heaven and earth that can't be known to the inquiring mind, and our mind is designed to be trained to perceive these things. Truth shatters falsehood. Wisdom shatters or illuminates the darkness and eliminates it. The mind is designed to develop these skills so that we can bring wisdom to earth. Okay, again, I'm going to unmute for a moment here and entertain any questions before I move on. Any comments or questions?
Well, Carl, I was wondering if the law of inevitability is supports this strongly, because I mean, I was thinking of everything that went on over the weekend and saying that how low or how violent can humanity become, where it has to start seeking, if I want to use the word peace, just nonviolence, in that that would also urge this questioning. I mean, even if the questions that were asked over the weekend by many perhaps were superficial, I did sense that people are asking and saying, what's wrong with us? You know, why is God not present?
But that's
why do we only pray when we're, you know, when we go through something like this?
Those are all the wrong questions. See, this is the point I'm making. They're all the wrong questions. What's wrong with us? If this had happened 35,000 years ago, he would have gone in, he would have massacred the entire village somewhere and then eaten everybody. We have not fallen this low. These are the unstable, irrational elements of humanity. And we've risen to the point where we're shocked by this. Now, back 35,000 years ago, people wouldn't have been shocked by this. There wouldn't be any talk about gun controls because we didn't even have guns. It would have been spear control. So why does God allow this? It just dumbfounds me that people have come up with that question, because the answer is, God didn't put that gun in his hand. God didn't invent guns. God didn't do any of these things. These are all, there's far more good news in this event than there's negative news. The parents and the grieving family members who lost people, they're all people who, as Rose and I speculated when this first happened, we wonder how many different episodes of individual karma where somebody went into a village and slaughtered the entire village in spite of pleas for help and mercy, and now they're incarnated into a five-year-old body and they get shot down. And how many people who are left behind are clearing their karmic slate of something like that? This is happening today because...
Cause and effect.
Yeah, it's cause and effect, but it's happening today because the past has been so much more violent than it is today. We're shocked today because it's not normal, but 35,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, it was normal. Hell, I mean, think about this. In the century we all grew up in, the 20th century, in Russia, 60,000 people were 60 million people were purged by the communists. In Red China, 55 to 60 million people were purged by the Red Chinese. There have been similar mass murders throughout the world in our time. How are those incredible things going to be balanced? We're going to be living with these kinds of experiences long into the future, because cause and effect has to be balanced out. It has to be worked out. We can't all just decide, oh, let's all join hands and visualize world peace and this will never happen again. That is a fantasy of incredible proportions. So the point is, that's why I started my column this morning by talking about over the last 2 years, 40,000 Syrians have been killed in civil war. Now we're all upset because 26 people were murdered in Connecticut. The proportion is staggering. It indicates how insular and compartmentalized we actually still are. We think that the death of 25-year-olds in Connecticut is far more important and needs to be talked about at the same time that 40,000 Syrians go unnoticed.
And those were children. They were plenty of children.
Yeah, and there, as Rose points out, there were a hell of a lot more than 20 children who have died in Syria. So we need to put this into balance. It's not that humanity is stooped so low, it's that humanity is rising and it still has to tend to its duties. We have the duty to clean up our karmic mess. Think of this as a karmic pooper scooper operation, and humanity leaves its little messes and it's got to come along and pick it up. Okay, let me move on here. We go to the Pillar of Revelation, and we have the real question is the Eight of Rods. The Eight of Rods are these eight rods, all archetypal forces, four of them abstract, four of them a little bit more concrete, moving from heaven to earth, creating momentum. We have the higher and the lower. And so the question is, the general philosophical question here is, do you form your questions based on wisdom or based on facts? Do you form it based on insight or on opinion? And what is missing? If you're asking questions based on current events or what other people have said or whatever, what is missing? What element of spirit, truth, light are you failing to tap that can change this whole situation around, and you can start asking correct questions? The way to boil this down to a single question would be this. The real question is, what don't I know? What do I not know? What don't I know? And you can ask that about every question you might think of. You take something like this episode in Connecticut, instead of coming out and saying, we need gun control, we need to rise to a higher moral level, blah, 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 we need stronger churches, whatever, we need clean air. I'm surprised somebody didn't come out over the weekend and say, we need to stop importing Arabian oil, that'll solve these problems. It is the non sequitur, of course, but I'm surprised, since that's a cause celebre for many people, that somebody didn't come out and say it. Maybe they did. I didn't follow it all that closely. But in any event, what don't I know? That's the question to ask. What don't I know about God's plan that might explain how that kind of mass murder can happen? If you understand, after all, that God is interested in us down here to clean up the messes on earth, redeem substance, well, this is a very good way for people to contribute to that in their way, on their way to cleaning the slate of karma and whatnot. So what don't I know? What don't you know? What doesn't humanity understand yet? Those are the real questions here, and the answer always lies in terms of spirit. I don't have enough light. I don't have enough wisdom. I don't have enough insight. I can say this just as easily as anybody else. I read the Tibetan DK with jaw-dropping awe. Now, that's a hard one to say. Jaw-dropping awe. Because you say, well, you know, the whole reason why there's all this cancer is because it's innate in the material, the substance of Earth. And humanity can't do a whole lot about it except cope with it. Try to find solutions to it. All right, that explains a lot. But I didn't know that. I knew a lot about cancer, but I didn't know that. See? And for all I know, he can trace it right back to Sirius, and there's some problem with Sirius. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, the whole explanation of civil war in Syria has to do with something about Sirius. I'm joking here. But we look for larger causes. We look for explanations in the patterns of astrological influences. We look for the life of the larger life in which we live and move and have our being. And there's a lot of things that we don't need answers to, because They're above our level of understanding and comprehension. So the real question is, what don't you know? All right. We then go on to the next card, which is the Fool. The Fool is number 0 in the Major Arcana, meaning that it has no time or place. It's not fixed. And the Fool is hanging onto his rod, which he has slung over his shoulder, so he's using the mind. The White Rose represents purity. He's achieved purity. God transcendent is coming down from above. And he behaves like a fool in the eyes of men, but it's his wisdom that makes him appear to be foolish. And so the bottom line here is the wisest sage always appears to be foolish to ignorant men. And we have to accept this, that at times we have to turn the assumptions of life on earth upside down in order to get to the real question and to the truth behind the real question. There are divine resources we cannot imagine. Resources that have not yet been tapped, have not even been defined with words. Do we think that joy and light and peace and harmony are the only divine qualities there are, with a few more? There's no reason to believe that there aren't half a dozen, maybe 2 dozen, maybe far more divine qualities and forces that humanity has absolutely no understanding of, never experienced. We're not on their wavelength. And so we don't have words for them. We don't have ideas for them. And yet, they're unquestionably part of our future, and eventually we'll develop the eyes to see them and the ears to hear their keynote, and we'll start to become responsive. This is exemplified by freedom. Up until a couple of thousand years ago, most languages in the human family did not have a word for freedom. The concept did not exist. And yet we've discovered a great deal about freedom and how to throw it away. And there are many, many more qualities that we will be developing that will help us in our work of spiritualizing Earth, of redeeming the substance of Earth. So we have to be willing to play the fool and ask questions that reveal wisdom, not foolishness. We go on to the 9th card then, the 9 of Cups. This is the spiritual ideal. The 9 of Cups is the only cup here. It really doesn't reflect the emotions. It is the recognition that our answers lie within our own design as human beings. We are designed to tap the infinite, learn to use the mind to attune to abstract infinite qualities and forces, understand them, import them into our consciousness, translate them into finite expression, and the answer always lies within us. That's what that smirk on the 9 of Cups means. He's standing there looking very inscrutable and saying, the answer lies within. Each of us is an infinite font of wisdom if we develop the mind to work that way. So we must organize our own questions, priorities, use them in developing our dialogue with God. We can go back to the real question and begin each day by saying, what don't I know that I need to know in order to be successful today? And we can then take it another step and go back to the fool and say, in what way am I acting in foolish, like a fool, because I'm ignoring the divine influences that would guide me? And then we find these within us. And we cultivate this ongoing dialogue. Our meditations are meant to be dialogues, conversations with God. Not just prayers, where we ask for advantages, but dialogues where we take our ignorance and our selfishness and we sacrifice them on the altar of the divine temple. Then we come to the culmination, the Seven of Pentacles. Seven of Pentacles is a man or a woman, perhaps a woman, petting his or her pet goose. And there's this big tree in the background, which represents, well, the big gray blob, which represents mass consciousness, or as I affectionately call it, the big gray blob. And so we've already talked a little bit about this, but our thinking can be easily swayed by mass consciousness. Mass consciousness is, in fact, if we want to diagram this, we talk glibly about our Father in whom we live and move and have our being, but in reality, most human beings live and move and have their being within mass consciousness. And it's mass consciousness that drives people, and unstable people, insane and cause them to flip a gear and go out and murder people. There are other forces too. But we need to establish a positive polarity vis-a-vis mass consciousness. And our dialogue with mass consciousness should be one as a radiant lamp on top of a hill, radiating light out for the whole world to benefit from it. We don't take orders from mass consciousness. We don't ask mass consciousness for guidance. We pierce beyond mass consciousness and establish a dialogue with the soul, and based on that, establish a positive polarity with mass consciousness, passing on our blessings, our wisdom, and our strength to mass consciousness. And this is an important part of the law of inquiry, that we don't allow the shell around us, whether it's our own sense of selfish personality or our sense of community spirit or our sense of mass consciousness, we don't let those shells of consciousness around us dictate to us who we are. We penetrate beyond them with the power of our inquiry to establish a dialogue with the soul, and we become a positive, active expression of divinity toward a negative, receptive mass consciousness that we can then shape and mold. And we should never replace divine wisdom with worldly perspectives and opinions. And that's largely what the dynamic of this last weekend has been. We've been inundated under a barrage of absolutely ludicrous, opinionated hogwash from the world experts who don't know diddly. And we needed to see how ludicrous and ridiculous that is, and use the law of inquiry to penetrate through the miasma and the mischief and reinstate our dialogue with the divine. That's the law of inquiry. All right, I'm going to unmute and entertain comments and questions about the law of inquiry. Anybody?
Carl, just, you know, I'm listening to you here. I think what you've told us many times is, if you have a question or whatever you're doing, go think of the triangle, but go to that apex. So always go to the highest.
Absolutely.
possible awareness that you have or that you can even anticipate or to try to draw down the truth or an understanding rather than try to put the pieces together of the craziness and develop, you know, some kind of an understanding, which is just backwards and ass backwards.
Right.
You've seen all we've been there.
Yeah, upside down. Good. Anybody else? I don't know whether anybody remembers a comedy show from 20 years ago, The Third Rock from the Sun, but it was a group of aliens that had come to Earth to investigate things and set up shop. And the one character, the teenage boy, he actually was several hundred years old, but he was appearing as a teenage boy, would sometimes go into trance and he would be delivering messages from the big head back on whatever planet they came from. And this is a great way of thinking of this, that the mind of God is the big head. And every now and then, even when we least suspect it, but certainly if we ask for it, transmissions come in bursts of wisdom and intelligence and insight come in from the big head, and we damn well better listen. That's the law of inquiry. Anybody else? Well, that's it for tonight. I thank everybody for participating. We won't do this for another couple of weeks. Our next session will be January 7th, and that'll be a whole new year. So everybody have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll resume then. Thank you, and good night.